In the sermon today, I thought about the logo of the United Church of God. Now, the logo is here on the front of the lectern. I suppose you can see that. Some of you may not be able to see it. It's a big round circle. That's how the logo was formed. And around the outer ring of that circle, there is a section which says on the top, United Church of God, and on the bottom it says an international association. I hope you all have that in your memory, and you can visualize it at any time without looking at it. Inside that outer ring is a replica of the globe. The replica, or at least a segment of the globe, it can't be the entire globe, but a segment which can be seen there. And on that segment of the globe, it has two purposes for which the United Church of God has committed itself. The first purpose is preaching the gospel. And the second purpose is preparing a people. So that's what we are. That's who we are. That's what we're doing here. We are not a social club. We are a group of people that God has called, and we are called for a purpose. The first part of the purpose is to preach the gospel. Second part of the purpose is to prepare a people. And I hope we all have that firmly emblazoned in our minds, and it comes to us frequently from time to time as we go through our daily lives. These things, in one single symbol, exemplify who we are. We have a holy day plan. We have high Sabbaths, annual Sabbaths, higher ranking Sabbaths that we observe on a yearly basis. Even say eight if we wanted to include the Passover. But really, the Passover is not a high holy day. And really, until the Passover was fulfilled by Christ, we were in no position to even begin the holy day plan of God. First thing necessary was the sacrifice of Christ. But then after that, God gave us a holy day plan, which is a 7-point outline of what God is doing and how we relate to that master plan. Here we are. We have counted 50. We're all mathematical, I guess, in that we are able to count 50. Mr. Seeker said 50 days since he'd seen many of us. Well, he saw me yesterday, so it was only 49. I don't know if that makes me first or not. But anyway, I guess we would say the logo, since we are the people who are being prepared, does indicate, doesn't it, that we will be the first group of people. And that's an honor. It's also a responsibility. And we are given that responsibility. And I would like to put that responsibility into this 50th day, the day of Pentecost. Here's a scripture we read during the days of Pentecost, during the day of Pentecost, Leviticus chapter 23, verse 21. You shall proclaim the self-same day. What self-same day? the selfsame day when you counted to number 50. You shall proclaim the 50th day that it may be a holy convocation. Here we are, situated in Genesee, the beautiful valley, observing this 50th day as a holy convocation, a formal worship service where we come to thank God and to worship Him, assembling together as is commanded. You shall do no servile work. It shall be a statute forever. Long time. Long time. In all your generations, throughout your generations. But I ask you a question here. What is the duration of Pentecost? What time period are we talking about for Pentecost? The scriptures there say we are to observe and count 50 days. And the church began to observe and count those 50 days on the Sunday after which Christ was crucified. That was the start of the 50-day count. And they came 50 days later to Acts chapter 2, and God's Holy Spirit was given to the church at that time. Day of Pentecost. The day of Pentecost. But I would submit to you this. Pentecost is more than just the one day. More than the 50th day. It's 50 days because that represents a period of the first harvest of grain. But it's called what? It's called the Feast of First Fruits, isn't it? Is that the end of the first fruits? Or are there other first fruits which are to be observed as well? We're talking about seeds and planting seeds and so forth. And yes, there are other first fruits that come throughout the summer. I hope if you have a garden, you observe those other first fruits as well. There are scriptures that talk about that. I don't have time to go into everything today, but there is a time throughout the summer as well when first fruits come in, and they are to be observed as well. So if we look at Pentecost and say, what's the duration of Pentecost? If we say it started with the crucifixion of Christ, the Sunday after the crucifixion of Christ, and it extends throughout all of the summer months, it's a 2,000-year-long period of time, isn't it? Until Christ returns. The physical short period of time that we observe in a year is 50 days, but we continue to observe that because who came during that 50-day period? Well, the church. But then, after the day of Pentecost, still in the time of Pentecost, there were other first fruits. You are represented by those first fruits. The year after the day, after the actual fulfillment of the day of Pentecost. The actual fulfillment of the day of Pentecost happened in 31 A.D. or 33 A.D. In that particular period of time. Pentecost, the giving of God's Holy Spirit, the founding of His church happened at that time, but God was continuing to call first fruits from that time on and will continue to call them until the return of Jesus Christ. And so when our summer first fruits come in, who are we celebrating? We're celebrating the fact that God has called us later on after the initial day of Pentecost. And so having a garden and doing the gardening, Mr. Brown mentioned yesterday very effectively, I thought, the importance of gardening and the relationship to the plan of God. For the duration of Pentecost, if we want to set a time period for the duration of Pentecost, it's 2,000 years. For us, it's really quite a long time from the death of Christ to the return of Christ, the period of time in which God will call His first fruits and He will use them. From the logo. Two things, preaching the gospel. I'm not going to focus on preaching the gospel today. I'll probably focus on that more than anything else. But today I want to focus on preparing a people. Because we are being prepared during the time of Pentecost, 2,000 year period. Not only us, but generation after generation, there are a few people who are being prepared to do what? If we're preparing a people, if the church has chosen this description of itself, preparing a people, and we are the people that are being prepared, for what are we being prepared? And in what way are we being prepared? Pentecost is a time period. You and I are being prepared. We are being prepared for a great event. In fact, many great events. There's an ultimate culmination that we'll be looking at. In the trip to Estonia, putting in perspective what I experienced when I was there, I felt that the last 10 years that we, not me, not you, but we, encompassing many people, have spent working with Valdir Vasenki has done a great deal to help us be prepared as a people. And that's what I think. I think about this. Everything that we're doing, we're not a social club. We're here for a purpose. There's a job which God has given to us, and we've got to be ready to do that job. We're being prepared to do that job. There's an objective to preparation. And we're being prepared as we go through our daily lives. That should be crystallizing in our head. Every experience that we have should be being crystallized as we, in this time of Pentecost, this time period of Pentecost, are being prepared to do that job. And I have been privileged, and many of you have as well, to have spent 10 years working to help an individual who has transformed his life, no less than transformed his life in this period of time. If anyone has been prepared, then the man who has lived through the experience has been prepared more than we have by the experience that he has had. Prepared for what? Revelation chapter 20 and verse 12. This event is a culmination, a conclusion. I don't know, culmination may mean the beginning, but this is the conclusion of the things that God has given us to do. Just read one verse here. You're all familiar with this. I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God. The books were open, and another book was open, which is the book of life. The dead were judged out of those things which were written in the books according to their works. More than any other single thing, we are being prepared, I would say, for that time period. And I had it brought home to me during this trip in a way that I had not previously really understood it. And so I want to try and communicate with you the things that I experienced that you also have been over some period of time, many of you, participating in. In such a way that we all maybe can crystallize that experience. This is my simile. What a simile is, it's a literary device, I think. Maybe I've got it wrong, but if I'm correct, if I'm not, just assume that I am. A simile is something which is similar to something else. Now, what is the release from prison similar to? My simile was that the release of Valdor from prison was similar to the resurrection of the dead. It was as a person being resurrected from the dead. What we had in common and what we needed to provide for him at that time, it's an experience which will be repeated billions and billions of times during the second resurrection. We will have to have thought about these things. We are being prepared for that, in part for that, not just for that, but in part for that resurrection and the things that will be necessary to be done. Physical things that will be necessary to be done for physical human beings who will be resurrected at that time. The dead, small and great, standing before God, being judged. That's kind of an awesome thing, isn't it, when you think about it? Billions of people are going to be resurrected from the dead. One man came out of the prison. I wasn't there. I wanted to be there. I thought I was going to be there. I wasn't there. Apparently God thought it was better for somebody else to be there than it was for me. And I think I can see why, but that's not the point of this. He came out of the prison as though somebody had just been resurrected from the grave. He came out, and this is something that we will think about. Maybe we can ruminate on. We could consider the importance and the relevance of somebody coming out of the grave. What do they have at that point? Nothing. He came out of that prison with nothing. Absolutely nothing. We're being prepared for dealing, and I think this could be a really important thing. It's a 10-year experience. Could be a really important thing for us to recognize in my simile. I made it a simile similar to the resurrection of the dead. Now, Valdur had a different simile. He said, I feel like I just left Egypt. You know, I was in prison, I was a slave in Egypt, and I left Egypt. So that was his simile, and I couldn't think that mine was better than his, except that I did feel that mine was maybe preparing him and me and many other people, including all of you, for a future event that we're going to participate in. We're not a social club. We're not here because we like each other and we get along well. Yes, we should, and yes, we do, and it's nice to have friends and the fellowship we have is really important to our spiritual health. But that's not the primary purpose. We're here to be prepared for a job. God is preparing us for a job. A big part of that job will be the ultimate conclusion when billions and billions of people will be resurrected from the dead. And they'll be similar to that man walking out of the door with nothing. When they come up out of the grave, they're going to need everything. They're going to need everything. Christ set us an example. And this is maybe a little bit out of context. Well, it's really out of context when you look at it. But, nevertheless, the principle still stands. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 21, Peter says of Christ, "Hereunto are you called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps." The example that I think of in this regard is God and Christ planned everything in advance. For you and I, if we're thinking in terms of the second resurrection, and during this Pentecost period we are being prepared for that second resurrection, we also need to be thinking about and planning for a time yet distant in the future, but not so far away as it will, as it seems to us now. There's training. Planning involves training. Mr. Brown's sermon yesterday, I thought about this in relationship to the training that I was given in gardening. Who taught me how to garden? Well, my father did. He taught me, and we did it the hard way. You know, we didn't have rototillers. We had a shovel, a hoe, and a rake, and that's how we did it. But nevertheless, much was learned, and now I have more tools to be able to do it. But it is a matter of learning from maybe people who went before us. How did he learn? He learned from his mother and brothers. For Hazel and I, our children and our grandchildren are learning about this from us. So these things are passed on from person to person. Planning is an important part of what we're doing. God has planned, and we should be planning also how and thinking about, as we go through these experiences, how they relate to things which are in the future. How will we actually be able to carry out these things? One physical example, one man walking out of the prison, gives us something to coalesce our ideas about. I thought about, if I'm thinking about this and if I'm relating it to you, coming up with the three most important things about which we help Valdor. And those things which I think that would be the three most important, based on that experience, the three most important things which we will be able to provide for people coming up out of the grave 1,000 years from now. I'm looking at it through a lens, I guess. That lens is having to do with preparation. Preparation involves experience. And the three most important things I will talk about in the remainder of this sermon. First thing, what would you think is the first most important thing to a person who is being resurrected from the dead? I experienced something that maybe I wouldn't have thought about in this regard in relationship to 10 years with Valdura. The number one, I would say, most important thing to Valdura has been communication. Communication. Many people have contributed to communicating with Valdura. What about at the resurrection of the dead? Here will be, and you may have seen the painting, which has been produced by Mr. Teague, of the second resurrection, Valley of the Dry Bones, and people of every time period, age, conceivable experience being pictured there in his painting. That's what you're going to have. You're going to have all of these people coming up. They don't know anything, by and large, about what is happening to them. How important, under those circumstances, will communication be to those people? Ezekiel 37, starting in verse 11, we'll read four verses. He said unto me, Ezekiel is there, and someone is saying to Ezekiel, who is it? God. Son of man, these bones are the whole house of Israel. Not exclusively Israelites, but this whole scenario will relate to all of mankind. These are the whole house of Israel. Behold, they say, this is the notion that these bones apparently have and that the spirit of man was taken from them. And their concept is that our hope, our bones are dried, our hope is lost, we are cut off for our part. But God said, not so. Not so. Prophesy. Communicate. This is the first thing that has to be done, really, when people are resurrected from the dead. There has to be communication. What has happened has to be brought to their mind. They have to understand what is going on and what has happened. That's going to be an awesome responsibility, isn't it? How do we communicate that to people who have been dead for thousands of years? That they have been resurrected from the dead. Prophesy and say to them, thus says the Lord God, behold, O my people, I will open your graves, cause you to come up out of your graves, and bring you into the land of Israel. And you shall know. This is part of the communication as well, but this is not immediately, later on. They will know that I am the Lord when I have opened your graves, O my people, and brought you up out of your graves. And I shall put my spirit in you. You shall live, and I shall place you in your own land. Then shall you know that I, the Lord, have spoken it and performed it. We're being prepared to meet these people and help them do that. What are we being prepared for? This is the big part, the communication part. When these people come out of their graves, you've got to be there and to communicate to them what has happened and what is the future like for them. So I would say in order of chronology, not necessarily in order of importance, but in the order of chronology, the first thing is communication to these people. I'll say to you this. Valdur's most important need for the 10 years that I knew him in prison, communication. Communication. When I first met him, he told me he had never had a visit from anybody. He had had a couple of letters from the outside world. Now he is overwhelmed with communication from people throughout the Church of God. He has all kinds of other communication in addition to cards, letters, and so forth. And we're instituting here, and others have as well, a card today going to Pierre Coronard, another prisoner in similar conditions as was Valdour. Communication is found in many ways. It isn't just person-to-person communication. Communication has to do with publications that we have sent. Communication has to do with books, telephone calls. Believe it or not, in the last year, we've been able to have telephone calls into and out of the prison with Valdour. Kind of unexpected here in this country. But there the prisoners have two or three phones in the prison, and they can pass those phones around. And if you have any money on your phone card, it's a prepaid phone card, you must have that prepaid amount, then you can make a call out. Nobody can call in, but you can make a call out. And so in the last year, Valdour has, we have continually just put a little bit of money on his telephone card, and he has been able to call out and talk to other people. The really most important thing for him. Visits many people. I could probably name 15 people, 20 people related to the church in one way or another who have visited him in the prison. That's 10 years, but still, and many of them have made multiple visits. And he gleaned hope from those visits. And he gained spiritual strength from those visits. The things that he was concerned about and listening to and thinking about and reading about in the publications were verified. He would read these things, and then the first letter I got from him, he said, it seems that your publications are saying something entirely different than the Lutheran Church. Could you please, he wanted me to comment to him about that. And so I tried to, without being denigrating in any way, say that, yes, that's true. We have a different point of view entirely from the Lutheran Church. You should base your understanding on what the Bible has to say. From that point on, I could see that Valdour was being infected virtually, by God's Holy Spirit. And these things continued to grow in his mind. Olavi, prison chaplain, said of Valdour, as we were talking about what we needed to do, physical preparations for him. We are a people being prepared for similar situations at a time in the future. Olavi said, well, we got a problem with Valdour. He said, there is a set of prison regulations, and you're only supposed to have a certain amount of things in the prison. Valdour has many times more in the prison than he's supposed to have. Those communications, those written communications, and the reference material were so precious to him. He saved every letter, every card, every scrap of everything that could be gotten to him. Publications, people who worked on those publications, writers, and we sent him, and this is something I want to institute as well for Pierre Coronard, we sent him transcripts of sermons. And occasionally, I'd send him some of my sermon notes. But he is hoarded, you might say. It's kind of like Silas Mariner. Hoarded those things. That's how important communication was to him. And I assume that when these people come up from the grave, communication is going to be invaluable to them. I think it's the number one thing in chronology that needs to be done. It's not the number one thing of importance. We'll get to that in a minute here. Second thing to think about, physical needs. After we communicate to them, what about the physical needs? When he walked out of the door, out of that prison door, and we have pictures of it, Robert Schultz, the pastor from the Schmilton Church, met him there, along with Olivier Elimetz, the prison chaplain, his niece Monica, and Monica's two daughters, all met him there at the prison when he came out. You know, and that's almost another part of communication, isn't it? When you come out, not walking out the door and standing there on the street, not having any notion what to do, having no possessions, nowhere to go, this would not be viable. And, of course, God is not going to do that either when he brings billions of people, out of the grave, and he begins to work with those people. We'll have to make physical preparations. So physical needs, they come before your spiritual needs, don't you? If you don't have food to eat, water to drink, you won't live very long. Place to go and lay your head, rest and sleep, clothing to wear. Here's the thing now. Valdor had one set of clothes. He came out the door with that set of clothes on. Where did he get that set of clothes? He got that set of clothes when he entered the prison. They took his clothes away from him and issued him prison clothing. 15 years ago, he went in 15 years ago. They took those clothes and they put them in mothballs. And he said, I really hate to come. It wasn't going to be a problem to him, but he said, I really hate to come out with those clothes on and have to have everybody smell me with all of that naphtha all over my clothes. But the point is, he had one set of clothes. These physical things had to be met. He would have no food if somebody didn't prepare and to help him in some way with that. He would have had no place to live if it hadn't been for the prison chaplain, Olivier Elimetz. And Olivier has a house, which he has divided into four apartments. It's not a house that you would like to live in. There's no water in the house. There's a dry toilet shared by the residents of the four different apartments. But it is a place to go. The bed is a mattress laying on the floor. There was a sofa with no sofa cushions in it, a small sofa, short two-seat sofa with no sofa cushions in it. I don't know what happened to the sofa cushions. There were curtains hanging on the windows, kind of, I can say, hung or nailed up or somehow attached over the windows. The roof was tight. The front of the building structure was stuccoed, and the stucco was collapsing off of it. But it was a place to go and lay your head. There was a wood stove. And there was also a stove to cook on, which was wood. Now, we think this is pretty primitive, don't we? But up until 100 years ago, everybody lived in similar accommodations. And Valdor said, it's no problem. I've lived in such a place before. 15 years old, clothes. We had to make arrangements to get him some more clothes. Such things as a billfold, he, of course, wouldn't have. But he had no money to put in a billfold anyway, but we had to provide him some emergency funds. He had a job, a place by the name of Mariplex, where they make special glass, and that glass was going to be something that he would help to manufacture at that factory. But it would be some time before he received his first check. But he's got physical needs. He's got to feed himself. He's got to, you know, he's got to pay for the bus to get from his house to work. He's got these kinds of things he needs to be able to do. These are the physical needs that have to be taken care of. When somebody's resurrected from the grave, we have to be prepared for it. We are being prepared as a people, and we are going to prepare for these people who are going to be resurrected out of the grave so that they can, their physical needs can be taken care of. It's clear that they will be resurrected as physical human beings, not as spirit beings. Physical needs will be there. I would like to mention to you that the church in Smilton collected many things. Robert delivered those things to me, and I took them to the apartment before I left Estonia and put them inside the apartment. There was clothing, there was food, there were all kinds of things like toilet articles. There was a billfold, and all of the different things that a person would need to be able to start a new life. We kind of hoped he would be able to hit the ground running. I called him yesterday. He seemed to be very pleased with everything and was doing very well. We are being prepared for an awesome job. The second thing that we need to be thinking about, the experience or preparation that we are being prepared for, is to understand, and we can glean a lot of understanding from this experience, understand what we need to be able to do to prepare for people who are going to be resurrected from the grave. See, that's our purpose. We're not a social club. We're not a social club. We exist for a reason. We have a purpose to fulfill. Third thing I thought about, and it's the most important thing, but in chronology, it's the third thing. First thing, we got to tell them what's going on, communicate with them. Second thing, we got to prepare for their physical needs. Thirdly, we set about preparing and fulfilling their spiritual needs, which is the real overall purpose and objective, isn't it? We need to provide for their spiritual needs. Here's what I thought about in regard to that. Those people are going to have to, who come up, as Val Luer did some long time ago, so this just kind of breaks the simile a bit, because he started to learn this before he was released. They will only learn it after they're released, after they've been communicated with, and after their physical needs have been met. Then they'll begin on their spiritual needs. He began to have his spiritual needs fulfilled 10 years ago in the prison. Hebrews chapter 8, verse 8. Finding fault with them, he said, "The days come when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah. Not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers, in the day when I took them by the hand to lead them out of the land of Egypt, because they didn't continue in my covenant, and I regarded them not, said the Lord. This is the covenant I will make with the house of Israel. And may I also say, this is of primary importance during the day of Pentecost. When was God's law codified and given to the Israelites at Mount Sinai? It was on this day of Pentecost. I will put my laws into their mind, write them in their hearts. So when they come up out of the grave, this is going to be put in their minds and written in their hearts. Who is going to be facilitating this understanding? Well, nothing happens until the Spirit of God moves in the lives of those people. But when that happens, who is going to be teaching and training them? We are being prepared for that now. What this experience, it ought to make us think, focus, and plan for a time that's coming for us yet in the future. Write them in their hearts, I will be to them a God. Spiritual needs being met, they shall be to me a people. They shall not teach every man his neighbor, his brother, saying, know the Lord, for all shall know me. Future tense. From the least to the greatest. I will be merciful to their unrighteousness, and their sins and their iniquities will I remember no more. You're being prepared to be a part of that. Now, if you're just being prepared to communicate, if you're just being prepared to provide their physical needs, it's all worthless. These people are called to be members of God's family, the same as you and I. But they need you to be able to facilitate what is going on. Pentecost is a time of preparation for all of the people that God is going to use to fulfill these predictions, these prophecies, these events which are certain to occur. Amy Grant talked about thy word is a lamp, a light unto my way, a lamp unto my feet. Well, you say God's word became that lamp, that light to Valdor. More than that, it became a burning fire. He was willing to do anything to fulfill those requirements. He wouldn't have been if you hadn't been participating and providing the things that he needed. But, you know, he was required to work at one point on the Sabbath day. And he refused. I mean, he had been working on the Sabbath day. Now he realized he shouldn't be working on the Sabbath day. And so, and that everybody in the prison had a job to do. He told him he wouldn't work anymore. He was threatened with isolation, putting in solitary confinement, if you would, for some period of time. He came to also the point of clean and unclean food. He sacrificed his food because he would not eat unclean food. It became more than a lamp and a light. It became a burning fire to him. He had to make sacrifices. And so will these people who come up out of the grave. They won't have to make such sacrifices maybe as you might have to make now or Valdor had to make then, but they've got to change their lifestyle, and it's going to be based on thy word, Amy Grant's song. This is the first year. It kind of came to pass. It was a shock to him. He was able to get unleavened bread brought into the prison and to keep the days of unleavened bread with unleavened bread. You know, before he just had to go hungry and not have any bread. But it was really amazing to see all of the things that God fulfilled in his life. Astounding to see. And then finally he walks out the door. He was given an incredible evaluation by the prison authorities. Even the prosecutor said, this man should be released because he is the kind of man that he ought to be, and he'll be able to go back into society. Normally, you're on parole for how long in this country? For the duration of your sentence. He's got another 7 years duration on his sentence. But on his release form, they made this provision. In 1 year, he will be totally free. That's an incredible, at least as we would view it, that's an incredible thing that has happened. Have you been praying about that? I surmise that many of you have been praying for Valdor. And so when we see these kinds of things occur, it's to me, and I hope it is to you as well. Faith is the evidence of things not seen. It's a faith builder for me, and I hope it's a faith builder for you. And I wanted to put it into this set of this structure that we're being prepared, and we're being prepared to help not just the one man. And who's going to be the biggest beneficiary of what's happened? He will. Bigger than me, bigger than you, bigger than any of us who have helped him, because it will be more relevant to the person who lived through it than it can ever be to any of us. He's coming out. He's been prepared in a way that we have not been prepared, but we can be partly prepared. We can share the experience with him. So God is using the UCG, United Church of God, to preach the gospel, but for the purpose of this sermon, to prepare a people. We have a privilege. Our privilege is that we have the opportunity to be among those people who are being prepared. I guess I think of the ultimate event in our preparation is to be prepared for the second resurrection. The three lessons that I take from the last 10 years. First is the need for communication. Second is physical requirements must be prepared for, planned for, prepared for, and taken before the resurrection can occur. And thirdly, spiritual needs have to be taken care of. That's the most important, of course, because it ultimately leads to what God has been doing the whole time. Revelation 20 and verse 12. I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God. The books were opened. Another book was opened, which is the book of life. We want to see every one of those people, because God is not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to the understanding of his truth. We want to see every one of those billions of people have their name written in the book of life. The dead were judged out of those things which were written in the books according to their works. We are prepared. We are being prepared. Listen, preparing a people. We are being prepared to see that all of these billions may have their name.